Welcome to the serialized audiobook, The Reef, written by Scott Sigler and Matt Wallace. Narrated by Scott Sigler.
Hey, junkies, this is a real girl herself back with episode 2 of The Reef Q&A with Mr. Scott Sigler. How are you, Scott?
I am grand.
You are great.
Yes.
How come?
I don't know.
Okay.
Comic-Con is over. We had a little bit of fun at Comic-Con, but not too much work involved. I am now back at work on the final draft of GFL Book 6.
It's the final countdown.
So I'm quite excited. One chapter in and have all the notes back from Big John Vizcarra, all the continuity edits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be pretty cool. I think people are going to like it.
It's pretty exciting.
It's been a long time since we busted out the GFL, and we're going to roll right into it. It's going to be great.
So we are doing the second episode of the Reef Q&A because we had so many questions. The Reef ended not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before it. And next Sunday will be... today you'll hear the second episode of the Q&A,
yep.
And then next Sunday will be the first episode of The Detective.
The Detective, Federico Esteban Giuseppe Gonzaga.
Yeah.
His origin story and what some of the things he did before he wound up being John Tweedy and Quentin Barnes' favorite private investigator.
Mm,
it's
true.
Not a happy
and
story.
Not Greedox, though.
we don't get into some of the Greedox backstory in that one, unfortunately, but it's a great story. I think you guys are going to dig it.
Okie doke. So I'm going to get right into this. We have a handful of questions. I think only have one more audio question.
Okay.
So I'll sort of save that for the middle.
Yes.
Lisa Brooks, who's a long,
long time junkie.
Yeah.
Love Lisa.
She asks, for all of us junkies, have you finally used up all the junkie names from the website who joined a while ago in your writing?
I have no idea. We've changed the website 2 times since we started doing that process. We used to have a thing called Crack Hits.
Mm-hmm.
So to encourage participation on the forum, and again, this is in the pre or very early Facebook days.
I think it was pre-Facebook even.
It started out pre-Facebook and rolled into when everybody was looking down their nose at Facebook like, oh, college kids are using this to get laid. Whatever. And nobody really
saw
that.
Nothing is going on here. I signed up, but I can't see anything.
I can't figure out how to use the software. And before anybody knew, it would become the absolute world-dominating juggernaut that it is. We encourage people, the more you participate on the site, you would get crack hits. And there was a scoreboard, and you'd get to see who was the number one junkie at any particular given time. And people could cash them in on stuff and trade them between each other and just give them away as fun thing. And it created all these great relationships using the forums on the site. And then now forums are kind of completely gone.
Yeah. In fact, we just made a decision yesterday at our weekly. We have a weekly meeting. It's just the two of us, but we still have a weekly meeting.
Yes.
And we wouldn't stay on track. We decided that we were going to kill the forums. Yeah.
Yeah, the forums are going bye-bye and we've had them up for 14 years now, something like that. But they are a magnet for spam. They require an enormous amount of time, both from us hands-on handling the spam, getting rid of spam users, and for the gentleman we pay to help manage our site when we don't have time to do it. And we finally have all of this time is taking away from writing for me and running the business for you. And not that many junkies are active on the forums, and the forums have become archaic. What do you call that? An artifact. They've become an artifact.
They really have. And you did a good thing though. You went to Facebook to the Sigler Junkies group, which is facebook.com/SiglerJunkies. If you haven't joined yet, you should.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked them. That's a junkie run forum, and you said, like, we're thinking of killing it. We're getting hammered by spam. And a lot of people chimed in with nice memories and stuff, but pretty much all of them, especially people who say, some of my best friends I met back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
But go ahead and nuke it.
Nobody uses anymore.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, Lisa, I don't know, because we don't track information the same way we used to, and we have found that occasionally a junkie name will sneak into newer fiction, but it's not as common anymore because we also have had a tendency to, like, hey, here's a contest. You win this, you can get your name in a book. And then we don't get to the book for like 4 years. And that's one more thing we have to track. And everything we have to track is something that winds up taking a little snippet of time away from writing and managing the business. So we really don't do it too much anymore.
Okie doke. So Eugene emailed to ask, I'm writing a comment slash suggestion about something that happens in the GFL series. There's a scene where Quentin cooks for his teammates, and some of them are disgusted that anyone would consume scorched meat. Considering the relationship most sentients in the GFL have to raw meat, this is a bit strange, but it does have the intended comical effect that makes one take a good introspective look at what normal really is.
Yes.
I think this idea could be pushed a little bit further. Have you ever considered having Q casually offer his teammates a glass of milk?
No, I have not. I really like that scene because a common sci-fi trope, and not just sci-fi, you know, like Indiana Jones movies like that, is when the local population serves, hey, here is a dish that we love, and our protagonists are completely disgusted by that dish. So I thought it would be fun to flip the script, equal time for everybody. Here's a perfectly normal thing that humans like, hamburgers. And to watch the key who literally eat animals alive as a normal part of their diet, for them to look at it and just hoik up a furball because they can't stand the kind. It sickens and disgusts them. So that was fun. But I'm sure there are other fun things that they can share. One of, was it Enemy Mine? Gosh darn it. No, not Enemy Mine. That's the Lou Gossett Jr. What was... Hey, do you remember the show? What was the show where the alien was Alien Nation? The alien was a cop partnered with him. And they wind up hating each other when they start because these aliens have come to reside on Earth and we're trying to integrate them into the population. So there is a mandatory amount of aliens that must be put onto the police force to provide equal time. So our gristled speciesist cop is partnered with an alien and they, like any good buddy cop movie, they gradually come to like each other. And one night they go back to the human cop's place after a very tough day trying to crack crime and they can't quite figure it out. And the human cop pulls out a thing of bourbon, and what makes the aliens completely schnockered is spoiled milk. So the alien goes to the fridge, finds a carton of milk, shakes it. You can hear the lumpiness inside.
Oh, gross.
and they get completely obliterated together, which is a great bonding moment.
Right.
But so one of my favorite clever little twists in sci-fi ever. So who knows what milk could do to the key or to the Sklorno?
Yeah, or I mean, especially the Sklorno or the Quith probably also have, since they're maternalistic societies, maybe that's...
That could be completely... Oh my gosh, yeah. I never thought about the Quith, because most of the Quith have never actually seen a Quith female. They've never seen their mother.
Right.
They're not allowed to see females. Females are sequestered away. So you can imagine the social implications of, here is milk that is given to newborns from a female. The Quith would lose their shit.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah. Okie doke. Rory has a handful of questions. He says he would like to see more story smack. And
we all would, Rory. We would. We all would. It's just that is the fun sideshow that A and I do. And if we ever wind up in LA, we're trying to make sure that that's well established so we can have, you know, famous people from the world of sci-fi and speculative fiction come on and talk about their favorite movies. But it's just, we just have not had time lately. The past few months have been among the busiest I've ever had in my career.
Oh, for sure.
And we are cranking out. There are so many books that are going to come out in 2020 and 2021. And we haven't even got to the crypt yet that we look at it every week. We sit down for a weekly meeting. Like, do we have the hour to hour and a half of prep time and then the hour to hour and a half to 2 hours of actually recording the podcast? And that doesn't count watching the movie. So you're looking at 4.5 to 6 to 7 hours total to put out a story smack. And we just, when we don't have time, we just scrap it earlier in the week.
Yeah.
And we say, we don't have time, we're not going to get to it. And that's that.
And, you know, we have talked quite a lot about it. There's a handful of questions about the story smack, which is why I read this one. And we're hopefully, I know we've talked recently about clearing out a whole bunch of sort of backlog that we have, finishing things, wrapping things up that we have had ongoing, getting the crypt done, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's all this year and last year, and will take us into early 2020. So it is very likely that Story Smack will be patchy for the whole rest of 2019, but also eventually we'll get back into it and be able to, like, we've talked about having, like, months in advance, having a calendar up so people can watch along and things like that. Yeah,
that's the one. You're right. That's the thing we're really, we're slacking on that we really want is to get the thing scheduled so that all y'all can go watch the movie, rewatch the movie, watch at least a couple episodes of the TV series, etc. Mm-hmm. So that when we talk about it, you have a greater familiarity. We're also going to change the format. We're going to try and get away from the minute by minute recollection of the movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we're new at that. We're still figuring it out as we go. And when we do have guests on to talk about their favorite movies or TV shows or books or stage plays, et cetera, we think it'll be a much smoother thing. But we had the Singermans on, our most recent guests, mm-hmm. who are the CEOs of Redcon One, mm-hmm. which is a workout supplement company. Cool people. But like that flowed much better because we had some guests to riff off of.
Yeah. And the other thing is if we can get a calendar up ahead of time, people will be able to... Watch ahead, send questions. Exactly. Yeah. So we're working on it. It's probably going to have a revamp in early 2020, and it'll be a little bit different. But we will come back at you because Rory also says he just likes all the jibber jab. He's in for all that.
Yes, my man. Love it.
He also says, "Will you release the first story about Kyle North in your feed at some point?" That's already been run. That's called Title Fight, and that you can find wherever you buy audiobooks. But we've already run it in the feed, so we won't run it again. But then his actual question, he asked a question that is absolutely not readable.
Hold on one sec. Let me clarify that. We already ran Title Fight in the feed for free, mm-hmm. and we run a story in the feed for free. We leave it up for a little while and then we pull it down and it will not be back in the feed ever again. Right. So it wasn't a feed. No, we don't have the files. No, we can't send it to you. That's our Now Playing podcast. We just finished with The Reef. That'll be up for a little while longer. Then it'll be gone. Then the Now Playing will be The Detective. And then we'll pull them down. And then if you guys want them from there, you can go snag them from Audible or iTunes or Amazon. Right. Now continue.
So Rory asked a too spoilery question. Like, you can't, it's just going to be, no, I can't tell you what happens.
Spoiler alert.
But he says, okay, so if you can't answer, then I'll take it as we read it that Agnes gets out of the tunnels. So how come old dude Sonny McGinnis doesn't see him when he pops out? I can't imagine. I can't imagine his bright white ass would be all that easy to miss.
Bright white ass. And if he did make it out, it would be very reddened by all of the heat.
Right. And he says, especially if he's dragging the big silver shiny thingy.
Yeah. Well, that's a spoiler alert for Earthcore. I guess I should have said that a little bit sooner, but that's the way it goes. You will have to read or listen to Mount Fitzroy. That's all I can tell you at this point. I'm not going to give that up.
Okie doke. All right. Let's see. Len Baker has a question. Are there any lines of any other books that you wish you had written?
Oh my God. So many. That would be its own story smack, basically.
Really?
Yeah, you maybe should jot that down. But, you know, that's one of those things, like, I don't keep a file of these things. I highlight stuff a lot. Like, I'm rereading the first Game of Thrones book and not reading this time for enjoyment, but I'm analyzing the crap out of it, going through and highlighting things and making notes and seeing about the structure and the technique that goes into making it such a captivating story. So there's hundreds and hundreds of lines that when I read them, I'm like, God, I wish I'd done that.
Really? Like in real time too? Like not necessarily a book you know you love, but
you know how when I'm listening to music with my headphones on, I'll be like, that's my jam.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm reading a book, it's if you ever see me reading a book and just see me go, fuck. Like that, that usually means you motherfucker. Right now, the biggest one that makes me say fuck all the time when I read it is Nicholas Ansbury Smith's Helldiver series.
Yeah.
If you guys follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you probably see me talk about this. But basically, it's hard for me to read the book, the series now, because the initial premise is so good. I'll give it to you guys in a nutshell. Several years in the future from now, probably 50 or 60, and governments have taken to creating, in effect, shield helicarriers that are not orbital, but suborbital nuclear weapon launch platforms. A nuclear war happens, flash forward a century or so, two centuries or so, and now all that is left of humanity are two Shield helicarriers, and the pop, and these are now 250-year-old ships that are constantly breaking down, and the only way to get parts for them is to skydive off of these things, go down to the irradiated hellhole that is the Earth, scrounge mm-hmm. for parts, and mm-hmm. then pop a balloon and float back up. And there's all kinds of monsters on the surface, and there's all kinds of political intrigue on the ships. It is just my favorite current series. So a lot of times when you have seen me reading or listening to the Helldiver series, there's a lot of fuck in there. So hopefully we can do that someday. But for me to go through and catalog them all, it would take a lot of work.
I see. From Ethan in Pittsburgh. Are there any plans to ever release a complete image set of every creature in the Scott Sigler universe to get a better idea of what they will all look like from Scott's perspective? Or is this just to be left up to the reader's imagination?
There's quite a lot over at Siglerpedia. So if you look for siglerpedia.scottsigler.com, get in there. There's an enormous amount of information, all created by fans. And a lot of those, like the species pages, where there is art that I have participated in, we usually have that art uploaded. So you can see the Sklorno as I envision them, the Quith, the Key. You can see all of these things. There are a lot of monsters there. That's the best place to go. If there is an existing piece of art that is my vision of what it looks like, it'll be on the Siglerpedia.
Absolutely. And there's also some for nocturnal, some of the nocturnal creatures too.
Well, the nocturnal thing, we're getting back to pitching that again. So if you guys have been following us for a while, that for 6 years, we've been working with Lloyd Levin, the producer of Hellboy, Hellboy 2, Boogie Nights, Green Zone, the most recent Hellboy, to try and pitch that as a TV series. And we've had several runs at it. We reimagined it, mm-hmm. Sell it. And now we're heading into our probably fourth or fifth
iteration. But this one feels real good.
This one feels good. Now, we have not pitched it to anybody yet, so don't get excited. But we're getting our ducks in a row, getting a pitch together. Mm-hmm. And the lead on this is Danny Bilson, who is one of the co-writers of The Rocketeer. Mm-hmm. And he also just sold, there's a Spike Lee movie in production called Da Five Bloods, D-A mm-hmm. space, number five, space, Bloods. Mm-hmm. He wrote that. So now that he's done a Spike Lee flick, he's kind of a hot property.
Yeah.
And we are going to go back out and swing for the fences yet again.
Yep.
So
it's exciting.
There will be art involved with that. And when we are able to show it, we'll post it.
Okay. This is from Jonathan. Hey, Scott. In the early days of the GFL, I remember you making changes to The Rookie to make the GFL books palatable for school and mm-hmm. the YA market. How do you square that with The Reef? Is Matt Wallace to blame for putting it right out of YA land and deep into mature audiences territory?
I tell you, that has been a subject of numerous conversations here at Empty Set, mm-hmm. none of which Matt has been a part of, because Matt does what Matt does, and he's a gifted writer, hardworking guy, and I love collaborating with him. I don't collaborate with anybody anymore, because I think I'm done with that shit. But you know,
on novels, you are done.
On novels, novellas, I'm done with that shit. It'll only be in TV. But collaborating with Matt was great, because I'm a big fan of Matt. But so we don't tell Matt what to do or what not to do, but we have gone back after the fact, and A and I have had to make a decision. Okay, The Reef was the toughest one, because The Reef is in the Galactic Football League. It's a mm-hmm. YA series. Do we want a book that's full of cursing and sex, etc., as part of the series, even if we label it like this is not YA.
Right.
And our final decision was to just, we're going to strip it of everything. We're going to make this YA-esque. It's in the ballpark. But, you know, right off the bat, we got The Hooker with a Heart of Gold.
Right. Well,
that's not right. Common YA fodder.
And I think, you know, we have had this discussion over and over again. And for us, we had this when The Detective, which starts next week or a week from now as a podcast, that's got some pretty heavy subject matter.
Right.
And so we talked a lot about whether or not that one, absolutely, because that character is in the real time GFL right. timeline. Mm-hmm. So that absolutely had to be YA. Kyle North, he is never going to play in the GFL. He's never going to be in a luxury box with John Tweedy. That's not how these stories overlap. So we thought, it's a audio and a digital only product, mm-hmm. technically not exactly GFL. So
do we have swearing in The Reef? Is there cursing? I don't think there is.
I don't think there's a lot of cursing, but there's a lot of mature
audiences. There's mature. And the Detective, too. It's got a LGBTQ theme going on mm-hmm. with that. And that... That actually, we've been working on the detective so long that the whole literary landscape has changed. So when we started out with that, we're like, okay, this is more heavy subject matter than, which is funny because the whole GFL is about racism and mental illness mm-hmm. and prejudice and ignorance. And there's like each novel centers on a particular theme. And then we get into this one in the novellas, but now it's in the world, just because it's YA does not mean it can't tackle grown-up subject matter.
Oh, of course.
All the big hitters now do tackle grown-up mm-hmm. subject matter. The days of, I mean, Harry Potter's not YA. Harry Potter's actually preteen or teen.
Harry Potter is why they made the YA designation.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So the Harry Potter more lighthearted subject matter, those aren't the big hitters in YA now. Now in YA, it's people from broken homes, people mm-hmm. dealing with systemic racism. It's people struggling with their sexual identity in a school environment. So the YA field is much broader now. So now the Reef and the detective fit in there perfectly yeah. fine, perfectly fine.
I mean, I think it might be wrong. I think that's why the New York Times list started breaking out audiobooks into YA. Books into YA as well, because Harry Potter was dominating the.
Yeah, they had to get it out of the way. Otherwise,
they had to do something that wasn't children and wasn't. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So Doug asks, a question about the planet. If the Reef is so small, how long does a day last on the Reef? Mm-hmm. Does it orbit a sun? How long does a year last on the Reef? Thank you so much for another great story.
Excellent question, Doug. We really don't have answers for those. Those weren't germane to the story. So we haven't nailed down the physics of the Reef. It's difficult to say because I have not quite figured out the orbital mechanics of it. Not that I can't figure out orbital mechanics, but
have some pretty smart friends.
I got some smart friends. We usually come up with a general, like, here's the gist of it. And if it's germane to the story, we'll talk to astrophysicists and like mm-hmm. Phil Plait helps out a lot with mm-hmm. stuff. Dr. Phil Plait, excuse me. We will get together with the people who know such things and really hammer it out. So I can't answer that, but I'm going to ballpark it. It's probably about a 16-hour cycle, but the Reef is oblong. It's not round. It does rotate, but not very fast. And there's some hand-wavy physics going on about the density of the Reef, which we get into briefly in the story. And the incredible density of this object is what provides it enough localized gravity. It's like 0.8, 0.9, somewhere in that ballpark. And then they have real gravity within the domes. So the Quith domes account for the lack of atmosphere. They account or the very thin atmosphere. Mm-hmm, they account, mm-hmm. they get normalized standard gravity. Quith human is standardized gravity because they're almost identical planets. So we cover a lot of that stuff by making most of the story happen in the domes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Danny Gonzalez. Hello there.
Hey, yeah. What's up, buddy?
Has a great question. He said, in this Q&A and in the last one, you named the remaining GFL series titles. You did not, however, mention the novella The Zoroastrian Guild, which many Q&As ago was part of the grand plan.
Yes.
Have you retitled this or incorporated it into a remaining novel?
The Zoroastrian Guild is now named The Killer. And we are actively co-writing that one with J.C. Hutchins. Mm-hmm. And I think J.C. Hutchins pointed out at one point just in a text, we're texting all the time about this, he's like, you know, how are you going to fit that all on the cover? Zoroastrian Guild. It's like the rookie, the starter, the MVP.
The Zoroastrian Guild. That's a solid point.
And I was super pissed when I looked at the first Champions covers came in from Scott Pond. I'm like, you can barely see the title. It's like small because this champion is so much longer than the MVP. You have to shrink it down. And then I was like, the Zoroastrian Guild. I'm like, oh, fuck. We got to come up with another. Even if you just have Zoroastrian, that's a massive word.
Yeah.
To make it fit the design of the series. I'm a big believer that genre fans and sci-fi fans, one of the things they love is having the whole series on their bookshelf in hardcover. Everything looks the same and clearly is a series. It becomes a treasured token that moves with you as you move homes, etc. So I wasn't going to make a tiny little title for Zoroastrian Guild because it just doesn't fit.
Aww.
And then he came up with The Killer. And when you guys read it or listen to it, you will understand why. So now I'm looking
forward to... So the Zoroastrian Guild is now The Killer.
Yes.
And what we've been calling Book 6, in case you've been living under a rock since April, is called The Gangster.
Correct.
Both of those are out in 2020.
And we have not named books 7 and 8. So you're a liar, sir. I thought you would trip me up, but you have not. Say hello to your family for me, but you're a liar.
Okie doke. Let's see. When the GFL, this is from Joseph.
Okay.
When the GFL becomes a movie. Oh, I actually asked you this at the last one. Would you do a cameo?
Oh, yes.
But I saved it. He had a handful of good questions, so I picked the one I've already asked.
Well, while I answer this, Stevie's got another one. I will be, it's contractually obligated. If you're going to make a movie of my stuff, I am going to at least have my face yes. in that movie. And if that's a deal breaker for somebody, so be it. But there's no way growing up being a huge Stephen King fan and being absolutely delighted when his evil face just pops up out of nowhere and something like, I'm totally doing that shit.
Absolutely. Okay, here's the question that I wanted to ask. How have the races of the GFL series been able to avoid interracial relationships and thus mixed races? It seems like a way to create sentience with different skill levels. I'd love to see a Squirno and a Heavy G mix.
Okay, so one of the things that differentiates the GFL series and all of my work from, I will say, more casual sci-fi like Star Trek, for example, and I'm only talking about this casual in quotes from the perspective of biology, there is no way we will ever meet another species that we can breed with. There is no way two species from different planets are ever going to be able to get together and breed. We can't even do that with creatures that look almost like us, gorillas, chimpanzees, etc. There's too much genetic difference. So the answer to your question is never. You will never see that crossbreeding thing going on. Oddly, one of the books I read, and I won't name it, mostly because I can't remember the title of it, as I was way back when, like 30 years ago, trying to find sports sci-fi books to read, one of the ones that absolutely disgusted me was... It did the same thing. They had all of the alien species basically looked human, and no matter what they looked like, there was crossbreeding between the species. And I was like, I was mad. I was like, this is ludicrous. You're never going to have this.
Well, and in the very, very rare cases that we do have, like mules, they're also unable to reproduce.
Usually sterile. So you will never see that in one of my books.
Okie doke. From Brian, loving the reef, and I can't wait for Kai to finish laying down the hurt. I've been a loyal reader / listener since I first learned about you when Infected was playing on book radio.
Hot dog.
Thank you for the years of entertainment in my car, at the gym, and while traveling for work. My question, is there some kind of connection between the reef, the artifact, and the grub?
I cannot answer that at this time.
Seems like they could be similar or related life forms, he says. Anything you can share? But I guess that's a no.
Senator, I am not at liberty to answer that question at this time.
I see. Okie doke. Let's see. Matt asks, I would like to know where Kai fits in the GFL storyline. I don't recall him. Is he getting introduced beforehand? And I have just missed him. So we think this is, again, Title Fight.
Yeah, he is established in Title Fight. He's also mentioned in The Starter. Quentin and John Tweedy are talking about his upcoming fight against Korak the Cutter. So he is firmly established, beginning with The Starter, and then he has his own story in Title Fight. And the end of Title Fight dovetails nicely into The Reef. Will we see him again in the series? I can't say for sure.
Okie doke. This is an Earthcore question from Annie.
All right, Earthcore.
She says she downloaded the book because it was Ray Porter reading and was so glad she did because now she's reading the rest of your stuff. She said, one question though, and I'll admit I might have missed it due to kangaroos and the drive home changing my focus.
Is this a spoiler? Should we give people a spoiler with this question?
This is a spoiler for Earthcore, yes.
Okay, so spoiler for Earthcore. If you haven't listened to Earthcore, turn it down, I guess. You can move forward past this.
30 seconds.
30 seconds, yeah. Skip forward. Use that little skip forward thing until you hear us not talking about it. Go ahead.
What happened to the naked person running up the tunnel?
Oh, we already talked about this earlier. That's Angus, and we do not know. At this time, I am not at liberty to say, Senator.
Okay, she asks, so did she miss a death, or will this all be explained in the sequel?
I am not at liberty to say, Senator, at this time. My counsel has advised me that I should not answer this question.
Okie doke. Will Cameron asks, he just finished all the books, including the Infected trilogy and Ancestor, for a school project. He really loves your books, and it gave him enjoyment to read. Otherwise, he's a reluctant reader.
Okay.
His question is, will we hear any more about the events of Pandemic and Contagious when cities were nuked or bombed in any future books, or will those events be normal to the people afterwards?
The events are normal to the people after. The first book we have after that cataclysm is Earthcore. And we, through the eyes of our main protagonist, Connell Kirkland, we get to see him actually talking about it. So as he drives to work. So I'm trying to normalize it, because when you think about all the crazy, tragic stuff that has happened on this planet, cities being bombed, massive wars, genocidal efforts by Nazis and others, etc. You know, it's really, it seems like a very short amount of time before the world in general gets back in their car, metaphorically speaking, goes to work, comes home with their family, and tries to move on, or does move on completely. So the day-to-day mundaneness, I think, would return even after a huge, huge disaster where like a billion people die, like in Pandemic. You're going to see things get back to normal. I've seen more authors playing in that space. Mm-hmm. Like, you start a story after the cataclysm is completely done. And now how do you then go about, there was a book called Junk, which is an Audible original, very similar concept. Like, hey, we just lost 2 billion people. Now there's all kinds of space available in real estate. And that was one of the points of the book. So, it's very normalized, and all future modern day thrillers, which once we get done with the GFL and the Crypt, we'll get back to, will all take place in the same continuity of the Siglerverse. Mm-hmm. And the day of the story is the same day the book is published. So the next one will come several years after Earthcore in the timeline of the Siglerverse.
And if you think about it, we normalize just enormous tragedy all the time. 9/11 is a clear example.
That's a good one.
The tsunami in 2014, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Christmas, day after Christmas, killed 1 million people.
Yeah.
You know, or displaced. Yeah, yeah, 1 million people. And that is sort of inconceivable at the moment, but then, you know, you get back to doing what you're doing to normalize your own life and your own experience. So I think that that's reasonable.
No matter what happened, you got to go make that green. You got to put that food on that table, dog.
A second question from Will. Do you have things that drive you to write?
Everything, all the time. The biggest challenge in my life is things that drive me to not write. And A has worked with me a lot on this over the past 10 years, because I would hole up in my desk and not bathe and eat cookies and Cheez-Its all day long and work on stories all day long and start new stories and not finish stories. It'd be just a giant shit show. So the biggest thing I do to not write is music. I do have a social life, but honest God, I have to schedule it. I have to take out time on doing, like, I should do something out of the house, and I have to schedule it a week ahead of time. Otherwise I just don't finish work and go to the bar. I don't finish work and go for a walk. If I didn't have the dogs, I would literally never leave the basement of the church that I live in.
Yeah.
So the band is a huge, huge part of keeping the fiction sharp and getting me out of the house to go see things, and then see things that inspire me and little tidbits I take away from the world that wind up in the work. And that band currently is Evan Diamond and the Library.
Mm-hmm.
You guys can look up Evan Diamond's music on Spotify and iTunes. Evan, she's awesome. And I really, really enjoy being a supporting player in her band. And that's a big thing. And then what else do I, and the football.
Football, yeah.
That's it, football.
Dogs, football, music.
That's about it.
I mean, you see a lot of concerts too, in addition to playing.
That's part of the music. But yes, the only day I take off 17 Sundays, partially take off 17 Sundays a year.
Yes.
And then playoffs. But that's the only thing I hold sacrosanct. And even that gets screwed up sometimes. Like, there's a thing called Writer's Coffee House in San Diego, where professional writers get together at Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore. And writers who are trying to break into the business will come and just ask all kinds of questions. It's run by my friend Jonathan Mayberry. If you haven't read Jonathan Mayberry's work and you are listening to this podcast, go read Jonathan Mayberry's work. We are very, very similar in subject matter. But he holds his goddamn writer's coffee house on Sunday. And when he can't do it, he calls me. He says, can you spot for me? And then I have to go do it on Sunday at like noon, right when the game, right, when my Lions are on. So. Yeah.
And it's always if you run the coffee or working the coffee house or going to the coffee house that particular Sunday, you're always the game that conflicts with the coffee house. Never can be crazy. The morning game.
But friendship comes first. You know, John, if Mayberry asked me to do it, I got to do it.
Of course.
So I just keep the phone. I have to have the phone face down and off. And then I only check it at the halfway break through. It's a 3-hour thing. So I hope that answers your question. But that's where I get information from.
Okie doke. This question is from Robert. Hey, Robert. Scott, this is not a question about the Reef per se, but rather about the GFL on the whole.
Okay.
I was wondering what the average Joe of the galaxy thinks about the Quith leaders. Are they regarded as single-minded pursuers of crime and violence? Kind of like the Star Trek equivalent of the Ferengi?
Yes. No, not at all. Because the Quith leaders are also the... You know, the architects, the engineers, the business owners, the politicians. You'll see more of the politician Quith leader in book 6, but they are, for lack of a better analogy, in current America terms, let's say over the past 60 years, they're the tall, straight, white males of the business world. So they just are endemic throughout all the coasts. So they do all of the perfectly normal jobs too. Any job that you would look at as kind of a leadership position or sub-leadership, that's a Quith leader. When it comes to pure physical labor, that's a Quith worker. When it comes to I kind of compare it to the United Kingdom. It's so civilized on the surface and so erudite and up there, but there's so much brutal violence going on all the time. And those are the Quith warriors.
Right. And that he has a question. Are the Quith warriors thought of as thugs and treated as such?
No, in that culture, not at all. I try and show that with Chota the Bright and Vyrak the Mean, Tara the Freak. It's a weird culture because they're almost just as smart as the leaders. The workers are almost just as smart as the warriors. They're more shogun type culture. You know, the knights of the Japanese feudal system were not looked upon as thugs. I'm sure there were thugs in there. And if you were a peasant, you had to mind your P's and Q's or you'd be cut down. But these were revered individuals. So think of the Quith warriors as landless knights, if you will. They're still subservient to a leader, but no, they are not looked down upon. That being said, all of the physical dirty work is done by Quith warriors, and they're just like human beings. There are great ones, honorable ones that do all the things we say we're supposed to do, and then there are the ones that go down and do the actual dirty work that needs to be done. And then there's assholes and there's psychopaths and everything else.
I mean, I am sitting right here.
You do all the violent work for a say.
Jeff asks, The Reef has been a fantastic novella, just like anything involving the GFL.
You're a prince. Thank you.
I loved the humor of the city names like Break My Back and Kick My Nuts.
I have to give those to Matt Wallace. Those are Matt's.
Perhaps in the sequel, clever, very clever, Jeff, you can let us know about other city names like maybe Wipe My Butt.
Wipe My Butt would probably be, it'd probably be a city on the Reef.
Not, definitely not a question in there, but I thought it was pretty cute. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cute.
Okie doke. We just have a couple more.
Okay. We're doing good on time, so a couple more should fit nicely. Okey-doke. I love that you guys write in with all these questions. It's so much fun. I never know really what's coming. There's always 82 emails that we just lump into one, which is, where's Crypt Book 2?
Yeah.
And everything else is pretty fun. It makes me think it's exciting.
All righty. So Daniel Gonzalez has another
Hit
question.
Me.
Gonzo.
Oh no, here we go.
I noticed that on the cover of The Reef, Kyle is shown with two good eyes. When we left Kyle on the Reef at the end of Title Fight, his left eye was patched with a piece of Korax carapace.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have extra work done since he arrived?
He must have, obviously.
Obviously.
Obviously. He took some of the what little money he had and got some work done on that shit.
Yeah. We assume that out on the Reef, you know, he couldn't, I don't know, kept getting dusty or something.
Yeah, everything's available for a price on the Reef. It's just an astronomical price. So the fact that he was completely broke at the beginning of the story lends credence to the idea that he did get that fixed. And don't forget, it is established in the GFL, you can get almost anything fixed. It's just we are always dealing with football players who can't have mods. And if you fix anything with machinery or anything synthetic or artificial, you're out. So we see people not do it. It's also not, it's not a world where it's a consequence-free situation. If Quentin has been told he wants to regrow that finger, he can, but there's no guarantee it's not going to be screaming with pain all the time, because the human nervous system is very detailed, even for advanced medicine, even at that time. So if you want to get something regrown, you are rolling the bones to see how that goes.
Okay. So we just, I think, have one more question.
Okay.
Which is, have you ever read any Edward Rice Burroughs?
Yes, I have. It's been a long time since I've read Edward Rice Burroughs. Speaking of another writer who casually mingles species from different planets. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Martians of his books are all smoking hot. You know,
yeah,
they are. He's got that. Is John Carter from Mars Edgar Rice Burroughs?
No, I don't think so.
Look that up. Look that up why I'm talking here. And yes, I've read a couple of Tarzan books. They weren't my thing. So yes, I've read a few, but I've not really pursued it.
And that's the whole question. So I can't even tell you why she's asking.
Okay. But just okay.
Edgar Rice Burroughs. That was Lisa Brooks again.
Lisa Brooks. So who wrote John Carter from Mars?
I'm looking it up. Okay. It's making all the noise.
Yes.
He did.
There you go. So he's got two incredibly famous, long-standing series that even now might be in the public domain. When did he write that shit? When did he write that Tarzan
jam? It might be in the public domain.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So there's your answer. I read a little bit, but not a great deal.
So I think that's it. Everything
what about
else
the audio question?
I can't find the audio question. That's what I was just looking for. Maybe hold I on. Played them both already. Okay, actually, one more question.
Okay.
This is from Annie Jenkins. She says, is Mount Fitzroy coming to Audible with Mr. Porter in the foreseeable future?
I'm not at liberty to answer that question at this time, Senator. My counsel has advised me that I should plead the fifth on that. However, I will say that every book that comes out, we are trying to make Ray Porter the narrator, unless it's a GFL book. So right now there's two narrators in the stable. It's me. And then it's Ray Porter. And if Ray's not available, then we will go elsewhere. If it's a female, primarily a female protagonist, that will be a Kovacs, mm-hmm, audiobook narrator. You can look for her work on Audible. but we cannot give any more details about it at this time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me again. We will come back next week with the detective, like yes, I mentioned at the top of this podcast. And that, I think, is a 10 or 12 weeks.
I don't know the full run, but it's probably 10 to 12 weeks. Yeah. And you get to watch Fred be... Fred is a mean bastard in this thing. He is not a nice guy in this, so no, it should be fun.
Should absolutely be fun. And so that's all for this week, and we will talk to you all
real soon.
You have been listening to The Reef, a Galactic Football League novella. Written by Scott Sigler and Matt Wallace. Narrated by Scott Sigler. Audiobook directed by A.B. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickiver. Copyright 2019 by Empty Set Entertainment. All rights reserved. Theme music is by the band Amps and Volts.